powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Let's look ahead to the 2021 NFL Draft, shall we? Now, the Seahawks are going to have among the fewest picks of any team. A couple sources have them at 5. Most of what I'm seeing has them at 4 picks because everyone's trying to figure out what the heck they have in the 6th round, potentially. Traded 1 2021 6th rounder last year to Miami to draft Stephon Sullivan. They might have another in there, so TBD. But let's, for the purposes of this conversation, Jake Heaps, let's pretend that they have 4 and not 5. Now, that would be among the fewest draft picks for any team. Usually 4 is going to be the fewest draft picks in the draft that year. So the question that a lot of people are going to be wondering is, well, wait a minute. Is John Schneider going to go in here? We know how he hates having a very low number of draft picks. Is he going to roll in here and pull Frank Clark trade 2.0 to get more picks in this draft?
Well, Stacey, what we do know is that this is the lowest number they have had in their era, right? The lowest, as you mentioned, is 8. I have a really hard time seeing them going into the draft with only 4 picks. It is simply not the way the Seahawks operate. It will eat John Schneider alive to sit there on draft day with only 4 picks, and you go to cut number 1, John Schneider looking back at a draft where he didn't have a first-round pick because of Dwayne Brown, and it was killing him.
So I ended up putting a Dwayne Brown tag in our second spot because it just is like all empty, you know, in the second round, and it like makes me sick to my stomach to look at that. So now I look at it every day, and I asked, I was like, can we please put a Dwayne Brown sticker up there, tag? Make us feel better.
So to make you feel better this time around, Stacey, you're going to have to put up a whole bunch of Jamal Adams tags on your draft board. Yes, to be able to get through this draft if you're John Schneider. And I just have a really hard time seeing them go into the draft with only 4 picks. The Seahawks have always been about volume. They have always wanted more bites of the apple. And this year, really, to me, is a year of adjustments for everyone. Still, we're going into 2021 dealing with COVID. But I do not see them making a Frank Clark type of trade to acquire more draft capital this year. I don't think that you're looking at this year as an opportunity to do that, simply just because they like the nucleus they have. You are very limited in the amount of players that you could get significant return, okay? And those players are Bobby Wagner, Tyler Lockett, Jamal Adams, and maybe you could sprinkle in a Quandre Diggs, you know, that he could get you maybe a middle round pick. But those are the real 3 guys that I think could get you some decent capital, Bobby Wagner and Jamal Adams for sure. And I don't believe that those are 2 players that this organization mm-hmm. wants to part with whatsoever.
Yeah, the second we start having this draft conversation, the few number of picks that John Schneider and Pete Carroll are going to have this year, I think of 2 things. Number 1, teams in previous drafts that have had the same number of picks. The New Orleans Saints had 4 picks in 2020. Tennessee Titans had 4 picks in 2018. Patriots had 4 in 2016. Jets had 4 in 2010. It's not unheard of. Teams have tried to make it work, and teams have gone into the draft with 4 picks and kept 4 picks. And that's not like 2 first rounders and a 7th. That I'm talking like maybe a first rounder, late first rounder, and then sprinkled throughout the draft. The second thing I think of is, and this isn't a revolutionary take, when you can't afford to add a ton in the offseason, whether because you're the New Orleans Saints and you're almost $100 million over the salary cap, or you're the Seattle Seahawks and you have 4 draft picks. If you cannot afford to add a ton in the offseason, then you need to be looking at the guys that you've already added. I'm not talking about KJ Wright, guys you added 10 years ago. I'm talking about, hey, Rashad Penny, who we drafted in the first round in 2018. Hey, Jordan Brooks, who we drafted in the first round last year. Hey, Rasheem Green, who we spent a 3rd round pick on a couple years ago. We need you guys to step up. Hey, Marquise Blair, who, you know what, Jordan Brooks had a good season. Marquise Blair tore his ACL and had to sit out the year. No one's getting blamed here. But you're a second-round pick. You're a first-round pick. These are the guys that need to step up. Seattle doesn't just need to go out and acquire new talent and come in. They need the talent they've already acquired to meet their own expectations in order to be a Super Bowl team, right? You need the stuff you've already got to pay off.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the biggest part of it all, in all honesty, Stacey, is the way that they have gone out and acquired and drafted, and it's put them in this position. And the best thing that you could sit here and say is with confidence and say, look, we believe in the group that we have right now. We believe in the development of some of these guys that you had just mentioned. Hey, Jordan Brooks is going to improve that much more as our first round pick at linebacker. We're going to get Darryl Taylor back. Damian Lewis is going to take another step. Colby Parkinson is hopefully going to be healthy to start the year, and he can contribute to our group. Alton Robinson, we got some good contributions from him. Freddie Swain. These guys can all take a step forward, and you know, you go into your next couple of drafts there as well, and that's really where they're in this position of they need their draft picks to really step up and to really round out this roster, because I just, like I said before, I do not see them taking that approach. And the only thing that they can do now at this stage to add to their roster is to make it a very unwelcome approach, which is to restructure and to extend a bunch of guys on your roster, a bunch of veteran players on your roster, to create cap space. And so the question I think is what's the best route, Stacey, in your opinion? Do you think that they do need to, you know, swallow their pride or make the tough decision to trade one of their, you know, very valuable stalwarts to their franchise in order to acquire more draft picks that they can turn into volume like they did with Frank Clark? Or is it to keep this group together and to be able to manipulate the numbers as much as possible so that they can make additional free agent signings?
I mean, when I hear that, I hear, should you trade Bobby Wagner? I don't think you should trade Bobby Wagner. I do think you need to have a conversation.
I'm not saying trade Bobby
Wagner. I know
that's
not what you're
asking.
Jamal
Adams is part of it, too.
Exactly. I mean, you're saying, like, you have your best trade pieces are also your best players, unsurprisingly. That's how it is with any team. And so do you give them up? I think my gut tells me no. Now, there's a portion of people that would say, look, trade people when they are at worth their most. Right? That was Frank Clark. Frank Clark got you 14 sacks. He was your best defensive end. And that year, you knew you would take a step back. You knew you would take a step back because you would not be able to acquire, whether in the draft or free agency, someone good enough to replace Frank Clark, and you didn't. So I worry doing that this year makes things a little more tenuous for some of the other guys you've still got on your team. You've got Russell Wilson, who sure wants to get to a Super Bowl. You've got Dwayne Brown, who doesn't have a lot of years left, who would sure like to get to a Super Bowl and has given his all year in and year out. You've got Jamal Adams, who you're going to extend, but it's sure going to make those conversations easier when he wants to be here. And I think he does. He's made that very clear. But Seattle has gotten this in this weird place where they're always like, all in on a year. They're not trading. They're not the Les Snead trade future first rounders and spend the most ever to try to get there. But they're always in this kind of like, what are you going to do right now to get to a Super Bowl? And it hasn't paid off. Like, it really hasn't. And so now you're wondering, like, okay, do you want to take a different approach? I think the approach you have to take, not that they don't take this every year, but the approach that's going to pay off the most is changes you make with the players you have right now. Are there conversations you have with players? Are there different approaches that players have to the game? Whatever it is you do, it needs to be the guys you've got on your team right now, because who's going to make the bigger impact for you? The person you draft in the second or sixth round this year, or LJ Collier if he has a great year, or Darryl Taylor if he has a great year, or Rashad Penny if he finally meets his first round lofty expectations? What makes the bigger impact for you? Chances are it's the latter.
Yeah,
if you can get it to work.
If you can get it to work, but then the other aspect of it is, how do you improve your team? How do you improve your offensive line? How do you improve your tight end position, your third receiver position, your defensive tackles, your corners? I mean, there's still, you know, a significant amount of pieces that they still need to acquire in order to round out their roster heading into this year. They have they have star talent. They have frontline talent. And you're right that those draft picks do need to step up and they do need to be a part of the equation. And if they can do that, if they can get the most out of some of those guys and maximize their roles, I think that that is obviously the best way to go. But it's a lot easier said than done. And I think that that's been a process that the Seahawks have kind of gone up and down on over the past couple years with their draft picks. So we'll see if LJ Collier can continue to take a step forward. He did in year two. But he unfortunately got drafted as a first rounder, so there's different expectations mm-hmm. for him. But he was a good rotational player. If he was a second, third round pick, I'd say, hey, that was a positive
solid
season
pick.
For him.
Yeah.
And I think that as you move forward, you know, with these guys that you have drafted, you know, particularly in the last year, I think that is going to be a huge desire for Pete Carroll and John Schneider and this coaching staff to see those guys take the next step. However, they are going to have to make moves to improve their roster. And the only way I see them doing that, because I don't see them parting ways with Jamal Adams, I don't see them parting ways with Bobby Wagner or Tyler Lockett for that matter. I don't see it happening. I will be shocked. As I sit here today on February 17th, I will be shocked to see either one of those players moved. And I think that they are trying to do everything they can to make a run over the next couple years. They have a specific window. They want to keep everybody together. So if that's the way that you want to approach this thing, yeah. then it's going to have to come through opening cap space through restructures and extensions so that you can be a player in free agency.
So here's my question for you, Jake. Neither of us think that John Schneider is going to make some kind of Frank Clark 2.0 trade to get more than the four picks that the Seahawks have right now, maybe five, TBD. I said that I don't think I would. Would you? Not what you think John Schneider is going to do. If you are John Schneider and you are Pete Carroll and you're in charge of personnel and you're heading into this draft, not just this draft, but into free agency with very little cap space also, would you make that move? Would you trade a big player?
Would I trade a big player?
Yeah, would you trade Bobby Wagner? Would you trade Jamal Adams? Would you trade Tyler Lockett? Would you do something to try to get either more draft picks or clear up cap space or both?
I feel like if I had somebody in the wings, if I had the depth at those positions that I felt comfortable with, then, yeah, I would consider it. But at this point, I don't think you do. I mean, you can look at Jordan Brooks, sure, but at the same time, who's going to play that Will linebacker spot? It's not going to be KJ Wright, so are you going to trust Cody Barton to do that? I don't know if I feel comfortable with that. I don't know if that's Super Bowl winning. I don't know if that's a Super Bowl winning linebacking core at that stage. So, you know, you look at Jamal Adams, and clearly he's one of the game's best safeties. So you've put yourself in this position from this part, and you have the talent to be able to put it together. So would I do that? No. I don't think I would trade these guys. What I would do is I would restructure, I would extend, I would open cap space here in 2021 so that I could, with the group that I have, make the best run possible and be able to upgrade at certain positions that we need upgrades at and not try and do it by bargain basement shopping or by thrift shopping or by going to Groupon and trying to find the best deals, but trying to add with legitimate talent that can be a part of the equation and can immediately upgrade your group and not wonder, Stacey, with Brandon Schell and BJ Finney last year, who knew what was going to happen?
Right.
You didn't know whether either one of those guys was going to, you know, pan out for you. You hoped that they would, but there wasn't a whole lot of great evidence that it actually would happen. And I think that some of those acquisitions that they make this offseason need to be just slightly a little bit different, and that's the way you can get it done.
All right, it is Wednesday, February 17th. Mariners pitchers and catchers are reporting for spring training. We're going to talk about two big contributors that no one is expecting much from heading into 2021. That's coming up from 11:45, but you guys need to pay attention to these two guys. You are overlooking them right now. Again, that's coming up at 45. We're going to talk to Mike Salk at 11:30. You got lots of good stuff on today's show. Before we get to three questions, Jake, I have an important question. Now, if you guys are listening to the show on your smartphone, on your smart speaker, whatever, that's fantastic. Don't forget you can tell your smart speaker play 710 ESPN Seattle, but you can also stream on 710sports.com where we have a video stream. If you're looking at the video stream, you can see that Jake is in an Airbnb in San Diego right now. And Jake, the more important question, it's not is John Schneider going to make a trade to get more draft picks. The most important,
it's a pretty important question.
Someone needs to know if the bed that you're sitting in front of is adjustable. And I also need to know if you went through that person's their things.
No, it is not adjustable.
Okay.
And yes, after you'd mentioned you need to go through the cupboards. Now my curiosity got the best of me, and
did
I went
you find
through everything.
Anything?
Nothing
no.
cool.
Yeah, right.
I was a little disappointed.
Let us know.
I was a little disappointed.
It's 11:15. That means it's time for three questions brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask.
What?
Pitchers and catchers reporting across Major League Baseball over the next few days. So I want to know, what is your favorite day on the sports calendar that isn't about an actual game?
Ooh, that isn't about an actual game. Draft day is pretty awesome, but I'll just say from personal experience, first day of training camp in football is awesome. You know, you got the fans out, especially with the Seahawks. You got the fans out on the berm. You got DJ Super Sam, you know, bumping the music. Just the intensity, everything is just cranked up and. Definitely the start of NFL training camp, just the energy, everything about it is just a whole, just entirely different level.
I love the start of NFL training camp because it's fun to just go and stand outside all day. I don't like it as it continues and it's late August and you're sweating and you're miserable. So instead, outside of anything attached to a game, so not MLB opening day, not anything attached to a game, underrated sports holiday, Bobby Bonilla Day.
Oh, when the Mets have to pay him his $1 million.
On July 1st, when Bobby Bonilla receives $1.2 million from the New York Mets each year.
That's a great one. That's a great one.
Bobby Bonilla Day.
I would
Final
say
answer.
Mine is Selection Sunday.
Ooh,
for the NCAA
yep.
tournament. You get the CBS Unveil show. They go through all the teams.
Now,
a real fun time.
Here's my question for you, Curtis Rogers, because this you've said that both last year and this year you just feel a little less enthusiastic about NCAA men's hoops. Do you feel excited about Selection Sunday?
I still do.
Still?
Yeah, I'll still watch it.
Okay.
Absolutely. Even though my team won't be in it this year.
Bear down, but go Zags.
Yeah, sure. I guess I'll hop on the Zags bandwagon this
Good.
Year.
Let's all go there.
That's where the smart money is.
Number two.
Interesting scene this weekend in the NHL. They have a pair of games scheduled on the shores of Lake Tahoe. So would you like to one day see maybe an NFL game or a MLB game played at a location other than a traditional stadium?
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. An NHL game. How are they going to make that work? Are they going to do that during the wintertime?
This weekend in Lake Tahoe, they constructed a rink on, I believe it's the 18th hole
I
of
think
a golf
is
course.
Awesome.
Yeah, that overlooks the lake. If you've never been to Lake Tahoe, go there.
I haven't.
It's incredible.
Have you been to Angle Lake and SeaTac?
I have, yes.
Similar kind of vibe.
I don't know.
Think about it.
Okay, we will, Stacey. We'll take a
Shout
hard,
out to
long
Washington,
thought
Tyee
process about it. I think it would be awesome. Now, I don't think you can construct an NFL field out of just nothing like you could with an NHL rink or a basketball court. I think the one thing that I would love to see is I would love to see the Pro Bowl back in Hawaii. That was such a fun vibe, and I know a lot of the players feel the same way. If there was a game that I could go to in a non-traditional stadium, let's go to Hawaii. Let's have a game over in Hawaii and let's take a trip and let's go down there and we can say it's for our reporting media duties. How about that?
We're like, we really have to cover this curling game. We really have to make sure we check it out. Just it's only based on destination alone.
Exactly.
The bowling league. Okay, so would I like to see an NFL game played at a location other than a traditional stadium?
208 points out that Major League Baseball had plans last year to play a game at the Field of Dreams, which I think they are going to end up doing this year.
But would there be no like outfield wall at all? Like you could
corn.
Just keep rolling forever.
That would get real frustrating. Yeah. Real quick.
14 home runs a game. Yeah, I don't know. I have no creative answer for this. I can't think of a really cool one where I'd be excited to go see it. An NFL game?
How about this
It would
one?
Just feel not like a real game. It would feel like some fun exhibition thing.
How about this one from Martin in the 509?
Okay.
Let's have a game somewhere in space.
Ooh!
In space?
The ball keeps traveling forever.
Yeah, gravity would be the ultimate winner in that one.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm going to say that's going to be... I'm going to say that's going to be a hard one to attend. I don't know about you, but that might be a hard thing to do.
Brian. Someone said Angle Lake is gross. Excuse you. Angle Lake is a fantastic summer, spring, winter, and fall destination.
For who?
Haters. Haters here on the text line.
Question 3. Should the Seahawks match any and all offers Puna Ford might get as a restricted free agent?
I think you have to.
Yeah.
At this stage, I really do. And we'll see what Puna Ford's market will be like if someone is willing to go out there and offer him big money, throw big money at him. But ultimately, I think that he's a guy that you have to do everything you can to try and keep. I mean, he's been a great player for you. He's improved every single year. I would be very, very sad to see Puna Ford get snatched up by somebody else. So, yeah, I think that they have to protect him.
It's one of those places where you don't realize how little depth they have there. I think there was a point last year where we all kind of thought, like, oh, my gosh, if Jaren Reed and Puna Ford, because Puna Ford was dealing with, I think an ongoing hamstring issue, if I'm remembering correctly, or ongoing calf issue, you realize how little depth they have there. It's kind of scary. Pass rusher, edge rusher was taking all the attention, but interior of the D-line for Seattle, they need to make sure they lock that down. Here's another question for both of you. Would you extend Puna Ford? Say he's an unrestricted free agent next year, not restricted, so you have to choose to re-sign him or let him walk. Would you extend him? You're dealing with more cap space next year. You've got the salary cap going up, and you've also got some guys you no longer have to pay as much. You might not have to pay Carlos Dunlap as much next year, for instance.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think that when you're looking at this situation, they are that's why this transition from 2021 to 2022, Stacey, is a hard one, because everything that you make, you're looking at 2021, obviously, it's just this year what you need to do to get by. But 2022, you don't have that much cap space. It looks like you do, $130+ million, but it's a lie. It is a lie, because you only have like 15 to 20 players signed for 2022. So that's why you have to be extremely careful about what you're doing this year and not borrowing too much money from the years after that.
Curtis, you're going to like this one. You said, what about an NFL game in space? Obviously, as a joke, when we were talking about alternate destination, alternate sites for NFL games, fun ones.
Uh-huh.
Someone said Stacey's boyfriend could watch, because don't forget that my boyfriend Brian is an astronaut.
Astronaut doctor.
He's an astronaut doctor, personal trainer.
Yeah, all of those things.
All of those things. So it's just a little known fact about him.
He could FaceTime you. You could watch the game.
Very real human man, Brian. So
totally.
Pitchers and catchers are reporting today for spring training for the Seattle Mariners. Coming up at 11:45, we're going to talk about two big contributors that you are going to be overlooking, but you should absolutely be watching more closely. Mike Salk joins us next, though. Instead, with him, we're going to talk about the number 6 spot in the rotation up for grabs, the chances that a pitching prospect could snag it. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, pitchers and catchers report today. I'm going to talk to you about that in a second. First, I have a very important question that's maybe more important. I know you were really excited. Do you want to get out?
I mean, you said like the two best words in the English language, pitchers and catchers.
And then you ripped it away from me.
I'm
sorry, but I have a more important question.
Right.
It's not more important, but I do have a question. Have you ever written someone else's name on something you've put in a company fridge to keep people from taking it? So you're worried about writing Mike or Salk
because
people might take it or whatever. Maybe people will feel like, oh, Mike would let me use that. So instead you write someone's name that maybe you write Wyman.
Oh, definitely not.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I value my own life and hide.
Well, I'm saying, like someone would be afraid of taking, if there was creamer, like half and half in the fridge that belonged to Dave Wyman, I'm not touching it.
Right, fair.
You know?
But if it belonged to me, you realize I'm some sort of a pushover. You would just take,
you just,
take
if,
my food.
If my name is on something, for instance, someone's going to be like,
whatever.
Stacy would let me use that, or Stacy doesn't care.
Yeah, I don't know. I think people would be worried about sort of the mean girl teasing that might follow.
Well, that's true. Jake. True.
Oh, Jake is here. Oh, hi, Jake.
Write,
yeah, that got you going.
If I write Curtis's name on it, maybe it's different.
Well,
go
that's
ahead,
weird because I saw half and half with my name on it in the in the fridge here that I did not bring to work.
Curtis, or excuse me, Jake, did you have a question for Mike?
That's shocking.
No, Stacey, what's this about?
No question. I'm just trying to follow where this is coming from.
Pitchers and catchers report today,
yes.
Mike.
Uh-huh.
Very exciting day. With the addition of Paxton, it seems like the bottom of that six-man rotation could be up for grabs. We're all assuming it's Justin Dunn.
Mm.
But could it be Logan Gilbert?
Oh, I think it very well could be. Yeah, I don't know that I'm assuming it's Justin Dunn. And I think you'll see, I know there's like 12 different pronunciations at this point. Are we going with Margavicious?
I've been saying Margavicious.
Okay, and that's what Service says, but now I think that's been.
You could say Margo.
Yeah, let's go with
Margo. Let's go with Margo.
Yes, we'll go with Margo.
Okay, purposes of this conversation.
For their goal of having as many lefties as possible. Look, I mean, you know, the thing about spring training is sometimes these things is when you have seven guys for six spots or whatever it is, it tends to work itself out. Somebody has a little elbow, somebody's got a little tweak here, somebody's not quite so free and easy at the beginning, and they get pushed back a couple of weeks, and you always just sort of, it works out. So I'm not too concerned about that. I think what you are hoping is that Logan Gilbert is up sooner rather than later and that he looks the way you expect him to. By all accounts, this guy's going to be really fun for us. You know, it's not that he throws that hard. I mean, he's going to sit sort of 92 to 94. He's not like a ridiculously hard thrower, but I think what's going to be, you know, tough for especially for hitters right at the beginning is he's got these just, you know, go gadget arms, right? So when he lets go of the ball, it's almost a Randy Johnson effect of the ball's instead of, you know, 60 feet, 6 inches away, it's like 52 feet away. And all of a sudden you're talking about like a little league field that the guy's playing on when he releases the ball coming at you. So I think that will trip some people up. And I think he's the type of pitcher that could have some success right away.
So what is this aspect? What is this, you know, pitchers and catchers return? They're a part of this now. They're the first ones to come in.
Yeah.
What is that process like?
Here's
as
the
you've
thing.
Experienced it?
Here's the thing. As much as pitchers and catchers are the greatest words in the English language, because it is the hope of spring coming back, of baseball returning, of the weather changing, of days getting longer, snow going away, it's also the most overrated event on the entire sports calendar.
Nothing happens.
All they do is show up and play catch. Nothing else happens for pitchers and catchers. Now, when the rest of the squad reports here in another couple of days, nothing happens then either. But a couple days after that, then they start taking some batting
23rd.
Practice.
23rd.
Little BP, throw in some live bullpens, right? You walk around the fields. And Brock will say to you something like, so what am I looking for here? And you say, just see who's free and easy. And he's like, okay. And that's it. And that's all you do. Covering baseball at this time of the year is the greatest farce in the whole world. It's awesome. Nothing they do on the field matters. Nothing you watch matters. Nothing they say is real. But it's awesome because it's about spring training and baseball season's coming. Oh, this guy's hitting 400. This guy's hitting 200. Yeah, but the guy who's hitting 200 is going to make the team. Why? Because he is. Because hitting 400 in spring training doesn't mean jack. But you get to watch and pretend that these things all matter, and that's kind of the fun of it.
What are you most excited for then? When you actually, let's say not when the season starts.
Okay.
We're a ways removed from that still, and we're all really excited about it. But who are you most excited to hear about?
Well, let me answer your first question. What am I most excited about? I love that. I love the surprise. The first game you get where they steal a win where they're not supposed to, where they come back late, where, you know, guy steps up and picks up a save where he wasn't necessarily going to be your closer, and all of a sudden he goes on a run and closes a few games in a row. So, you know, some of those, you know, surprising moments I think are always as much fun as anything. But look, you know, I'm like anybody else. I'm not going to try to go all hipster on this. What am I most excited about? Kelnick. He's the potential superstar. I mean, he's the one where Baseball America and Keith Law agree. This guy is a top five prospect in the game. And to say you're more excited about anything else is a hipster answer. You may think you're more excited about Gilbert or you may be excited about Kyle Lewis. Yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying those things
are
wrong.
You're just trying to be different, though, and you need to be honest
with
yourself.
But let's all be clear. Kelnick's the guy with the superstar potential. That's what you're most excited about, and everything else is second place.
Now, it'll be fun to watch Kelnick. There's no question about that. I am going to be curious, how far does Kelnick push these guys? How hard does he make this of a decision on Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais? Because I think, Salk, you and I are very much in the same thought process, that this guy, mental makeup-wise, is just different from everybody. And I would love nothing more than Kelnick to go out this spring training and tear it up and prove himself and absolutely, yes, force their hand.
Yeah, I think he'll try to do that, and I think he'll try to do it off the field as well, because, you know, he's the modern athlete, right? He's got a little production company with him, and he knows how to play the social media game, and he's trying to turn Jared Kelnick into a thing, into a brand, not just a player. That can't get started until he gets to the big leagues. So he wants to get there as soon as possible. He has incredible, let's call it confidence, in his own ability. So he's not going to look at it and say, well, I need to make sure I succeed once I get there. You know, I think Kelnick would have loved to have been there at 18 just to get the conversation of, oh, this kid got there at 18. What could he possibly turn into? Because some of it for him is the conversation around him, which is rare in baseball. And I think it's something we should embrace. Like, he's going to be a little different. He's not going to play it all by the book the way they did in the 60s and 70s and 80s. He's going to have a little more personality, and I think we're going to have to try to accept that.
Does he remind you of anyone you've ever covered? Even like shades of him.
You know, it's funny. Yeah, I think that
doesn't have to be in
Dustin Pedroia is the first guy that springs to mind. I think there's a lot of Pedroia in him, and I've told you guys the story of you know, Pedroia thought he was an MVP when I was asking him about a teammate. He was like, "Yeah, I'm the MVP," and then he was.
Sounds like me.
And he was a lot like
How
you.
Quickly can I make a conversation
diminutive,
about me?
Yes. In that you share with Dustin Pedroia.
All petite squad.
I think what Kelnick has going for him, though, is he's just more physically talented, right? I mean, Pedroia was a guy who got every ounce out of his body. This kid's jacked, and he's got a perfect baseball swing, a perfect baseball body, and he seems like he's got some of the attitude to go with it. Yeah, I think that that's going to be important. I think he's going to fit very well with the fun-loving, free-spirited Kyle Lewis, with J.P. Crawford, who's a really intense type of leader at shortstop, with Evan White, who's maybe a little more quiet. But I think he's going to be really good to push. You mentioned pushing the organization, Jake. I think he's going to push some of the other guys on the team and sort of have a sheer cult of personality around him.
I would love that. How do you think Scott Servais is going to handle him? How do you think that process is going to go?
Well, seem like very different personalities.
Oh, I think Scott loves stuff like this. Scott, of all the things, look, he's been here, 6 years now? I think one of the things we've learned about Scott is that there's room for a lot of different types of personalities in his clubhouse as long as you play the game the right way. And his teams have played the game the right way. Again, look at last year, youngest team in the league. They didn't make defensive miscues. They didn't make mental mistakes. They played hard. They played well. They weren't always the most talented, but they didn't do dumb stuff out on the field. So I think he's very willing to let a kid like this. He's going to laugh. He's going to chuckle. He's going to give his little Scott Servais dad laugh after every statement he gives about him. But I think he's up for it. I think he embraces a lot of the smack talk that will be a part of the Kelnick experience.
You know, Jake's out in San Diego right now.
He is.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm down here. So
you just bring that up to make me feel bad.
Yeah,
is that why?
I know.
So I
can
be mad at
yes,
Jake.
Exactly
just,
why
just to
I did it.
Just to rub it in your face. Yes. I'm in the sun where I know you
there.
Want to be.
I don't know how many cities there are in this country, but if there's two of them that are better than San Diego, I don't know what they are. I love San Diego. It's like one of my favorite places ever.
He is Mike Salk. You can hear him every weekday here on Jake and Stacey at 11:30. You can also hear him on the Brock and Salk podcast. New episode just dropped last night, brockandsalkpodcast.com.
It was a violent
one.
Yeah,
you guys woke
violent.
Up and chose violence for this Brock and Salk podcast. Yeah. Go listen to it. Well, not right now. Listen to us right now. But then go listen to the Brock and Salk podcast, brockandsalkpodcast.com. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
All right, you guys, there are two big contributors to this Mariners squad that we don't want you to overlook, but I promise you, you aren't thinking about them right now. I'm going to tell you who they are next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps here. I'm Stacey Ross. Producer Curtis Rogers on the board. There are two Mariners players that you guys might be overlooking, and that's a mistake. We're all talking about Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, when we're talking about the Mariners and things we're excited about. Kelnick, obviously, going to be debuting in 21 as opposed to 22 for Rodriguez. And there's plenty of other guys that have stolen headlines, right? James Paxton ever since coming back to Seattle. And that will continue into spring training as pitchers and catchers report today for the Mariners. But there are two players that you guys are overlooking because they're both coming off injuries and both missed last season. It is Mitch Haniger and it is Tom Murphy. And you shouldn't be overlooking them. You should be talking about them. Tell me why, Jake. Tell me why, well, Curtis.
I think that when you look at both of these players, these are guys that, one, they were dealing with injuries, coming off of injuries. But if you go to cut number 14 here, Jerry DePoto talking about how Haniger, he's pretty healthy right now.
We're really excited about seeing Mitch come in, and it's the easy the identification is when Mitch Haniger's healthy, he's our best player. He's Mitch. Mitch is a multi-skilled, well-rounded, diverse player who, when we've seen him at the top of his game, is really one of the more complete players in the American League. And if we can get some version of that Mitch Haniger back on the field, it really changes our art.
Yeah, I mean, the version of Mitch Haniger that hit for 285 and hit for 26 home runs and was an all-star that year in 2018, it would be huge. Even if you just get a little bit of Mitch Haniger's production, during his 2017-2018 years, it would be great for this team. It'd be great for Mitch's career, obviously, but it'd be great for the Mariners because they obviously could use his talents out in the outfield and at the plate, but also when it comes down to the trade deadline, I think that, you know, he becomes a valuable asset again. But, you know, when it comes to both Haniger and Murphy, I think that they bring a veteran presence. And I think that those are guys that when you talk about on-field performance, Tom Murphy in his first year ever getting a chance to be a, you know, get meaningful starts and play a lot, two years ago in 2019, he hit for over 270 and was very, very key, to the Mariners that year. So these are two guys that I think people are just overlooking a little bit in terms of their production, what they can do and what they can bring potentially if they are fully healthy and playing.
Now, before I ask this question of you, Curtis, in cut number 16, Seattle Times Mariners reporter Ryan Divish explains why Mitch Haniger probably ends up as a trade piece.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's where you might maybe extract the most value is in that way. But again, too, like if you're trying to be good in the next couple of years, he could be a good bridge to Julio. I mean, like Julio's still probably not going to debut in the big leagues until 2022. I mean, maybe midseason of 2022. Because like if you look at he's going to start the season at a lower level and he hasn't hardly played. I mean, you know, Kelenic will be up sometime in June, but Julio won't be until sometime in June of the next year. So having Haniger around, he isn't a free agent for two more years. Maybe you keep him as a bridge.
Ryan Divish making a pretty good case for hanging on to Haniger, skipping this year's trade deadline, saying, nope, we're going to hang on to him until at least 2022, that trade deadline, maybe even further. Is it worth having both Haniger and Rodriguez on your roster moving forward? What if Haniger, first start to the season, looks fantastic?
I think the Mariners learned from the last couple of years. I would say Mitch Haniger at the end of the 2018 season when the Mariners decided to tear it all down, Haniger's name was thrown around in a lot of trade rumors. None of them came to fruition. I believe the Braves had the most interest in him. But I think the Mariners learned from that that if a player's trade value is red hot, you have to deal him because if not, you run the risk of, you know, back-to-back seasons, back-to-back lost seasons for Mitch Haniger. Didn't play last year, and then in 2019 only played a half season. If Haniger gets back to that all-star level that we saw from him in 2018, if he gets back to even three-quarters of that, Jerry DePoto will not be afraid to move on from him just because of the potential return they can get for him. I think the Mariners have to have learned from 2018 with Haniger that, you know what, when this guy's value is at the highest that's when we have to strike and move on from him. It's unfortunate because he's a good guy. He's a great clubhouse leader. I think the Mariners had kind of anticipated him adopting that role that Marco Gonzalez kind of has now as the clubhouse guy, as sort of the voice of the team. Mm-hmm. But I think Haniger, as Divish puts it right there, his best value to the Mariners might be elsewhere.
Yeah, and I fully agree with that. And I look forward to the day where this is not our conversations every single time we get a good player. Right?
You trade this guy? Yeah.
Anytime we have a player like Haniger or Murphy that is playing well and is surprising people, oh, well, okay, is he going to be a trade piece? Well, no, we want to keep him because we're going to win games. I mean, hopefully we are getting to that point here pretty soon, but we're still in this process of rebuilding. And that is the part where I think that you can't worry about the stopgap, the perfect transition from Haniger to Julio Rodriguez. Who cares? That's the thing, is you have to be extremely cutthroat and look at that opportunity to profit as much as you can, just like Curtis outlined, and them having a very real situation that happened in front of them where they tried to hold on to a piece, they tried to have a centerpiece, and that centerpiece ultimately was not there for them. Mm-hmm. Haniger got hurt in a couple of crazy ways that no one could have ever anticipated. Poor guy, but the reality is that they're at a stage right now as an organization where they do have to do this. They have to continue to keep churning in more and more talent into their farm system so that talent can continue to develop. Continue to work on really turning themselves into a competitive team year after year, heading into 2022 really is the goal.
Side note, I had someone on the Busy Hard Seltzer text line asking if they're going to allow fans in spring training. I do know that both Arizona and Florida for the Cactus and Grapefruit League are going to sell a limited number of fan tickets. The Angels are one of the teams that will be allowing fans. I'm not entirely sure if the Mariners are. I'll look that up during the break and I'll let you guys know when we come back right around the corner. So just know that we'll double check that and that there are going to be a limited number of fan tickets available for spring training in general. So we'll double check if that's specifically for the Seattle Mariners. Now, for both of you guys, when you're looking at using, what I always hear is like, okay, well, the benefit of not trading away a guy like Haniger is that you have a veteran presence or that you have someone that adds to your club so much this year. And again, I told you guys, I don't want anyone to overlook either Tom Murphy or Mitch Haniger, not just because they're coming back and they're veterans, but if they come back and play really well, you once again run into this question Seattle Mariners and their fans will be revisiting every single time the club starts performing really well, which is, do you sidetrack it? Do you put it on the back burner? Like, what's the balance that you need when you are both trying to get your young guys excited about winning and also trying to build toward your future? There's this weird line that you have to walk there where you don't want guys to feel defeated. You don't want guys to feel like you're directionless. You want them to get a taste of winning and you want fans to stay excited. So, go ahead, Jake.
Well, that's what I'm saying is that you have to find that balance, but I think that's why you bring in someone like Paxton Lynch, Paxton Lynch, geez.
Bring James in Paxton Lynch too, though. Yeah, big guy, tall guy.
That wouldn't be good.
Plays video games.
I think the facial hair in and of itself just needs to stay home. But
looks like a pirate.
He does look like a pirate. What is that? What is that logo? That one. Is it the Tampa Bay Buccaneers logo or
the throwback pirate one? That is Paxton Lynch. It's not even Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
James Paxton is that's the reason why you brought James Paxton back, was because it does add value to your team. It adds value to the competitiveness of your roster, and also it's a name that people know and really really like here. So I think that was a move that was. That doesn't sidetrack you, Stacey, but it certainly makes you competitive. It turns you into the right direction of where you want to go through this rebuilding process. And here in 2021, it's about showing that these guys are developing into winners, that they can help this club win, and that you're not going to go all in to get the final pieces that you need, but you can see that the foundation is clearly set mm-hmm. and ready to go for you to then start investing in making those additional payments to or pay some of those high-priced free agents that will be out there so that you can start to legitimately talk about playoffs. I think in the Mariners' mind, if everything goes according to plan, if everything went well, guys developed the way that they want, that this is a wild card team, that this is a team that absolutely can get themselves in that conversation and compete for that spot. But that's with everything going the right way and trending upward in the right direction. And I don't think that they're going to put pressure or on their players or call to those expectations for all their fans when they don't necessarily, when they can't guarantee that or feel like they're fully competing at that level yet.
Now, do we think the Mariners actually have a pretty good shot to be a wild card team, surprise some fans and be a wild card team in 2021? Do not answer that question yet, because it is going to be one of our hype trains in my favorite segment that we do every single Wednesday, Hype Train. That's next.